Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable, and now with 3 months deferred payments too.
When natural disasters happen or towns are poverty stricken, on the whole, we're very giving people and we tend to donate money to those in need. And the question is, have we always been this way? In his book, Philanthropy, from Aristotle to Zuckerberg, Paul Valery explores the world of philanthropy, examining the pros and cons, the people involved from ancient Greece to the super rich today. And I'm delighted to say Paul joins us on News Talk. Paul, how are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. This is a very big book. You've put a lot of time into this. Obviously, you think philanthropy in the modern world is a very big issue.
Yeah, well, it is a big issue because there's a quarter of a million philanthropy foundations been set up in the last 2 decades alone, and they control $1 trillion between them. And philanthropists like Bill Gates, his budget is bigger than that of the German government when it comes to foreign aid. So we're talking big money.
And how they use that and the ethics behind it, they're all big issues.
They are, because, Bill Gates has done enormous good. He's, thanks to him, 2.5 billion children around the world have been vaccinated against polio, and polio has been virtually eradicated. So huge, huge good has been done. But it's got a downside as well, because with philanthropy, because an individual, rich individual, chooses what he spends his money on, other things get neglected, other things which might be a bigger priority in the country where he's choosing to spend his money. I say he because it is usually he, although there are some women philanthropists now. But also, in most Western countries, philanthropists get tax relief on their gifts. So if they're, high-rate taxpayers and paying 45% tax, then if they give $100 million, $65 million of it is from their pocket, but the other $45 million comes from the taxpayer. So in a way, we should have a say on how the money is spent, not just them.
Right, because they're getting a say in how what would otherwise come to us is being spent. You've looked back at this from the right back into the far distant past. The idea of helping those in need, is that always been in our psyche, something that we've just always instinctively done?
Well, when I went back to the roots, you find there are two traditions of philanthropy. One is like rooted in the Greek notion and taken on by the Romans, which is that it's about social hierarchy and social harmony. It helps what we now call social cohesion. And the Romans in particular, if they built an aqueduct or a temple or a road, they would have milestones all the way along, and it would say on it, "De soi pecuna fecit," built with his own money. So they were kind of adverts for the rich. And you still find that. The other tradition starts with the Jews about the same time as the Greeks. But they, where the Greeks are focused on society, the Jews are much more focused on covenant and community. So the idea, it's the Jews were the start in our history of the idea that there is only one God, not lots of gods. And this one God is generous to humankind through creation. And because we were all created in the image of God, that's the story of Adam and Eve, every man and every woman. It's our duty to be generous in the same way. So where there are poor people in society, we have a responsibility to them. And so there's a kind of triangle, which is me, God, and everybody else. And we're all kind of bound together in a kind of community. So one of those is about social control, and the other one is about a more genuine kind of altruism. And those two traditions have woven through each other all the way through the 2,000 years of Western philanthropy.
Right. So you've gone through some of them. The first and the reciprocal one, people like George, the very famous names, George Cadbury, Joseph Rowntree, Pope Francis, and that's a kind of look them in the eye and hold their hands as you give them some help.
Yeah, well, Pope Francis says it's no good tossing money to a beggar, and you've got to look him in the eye and even hold his hand and engage with him at a deeper, more spiritual level. And that's part of what's been lost in modern philanthropy, which is very kind of top-down, big business people using the same methods they used to to create their fortunes, thinking, oh, well, you know, I can use the same methods on philanthropy. And it's a kind of efficient but soulless philanthropy. And what Pope Francis is pointing to there is the alternative tradition. And there's a very good line from the previous Pope, Pope Benedict. He says that no matter how just a society is, because a lot of people say, oh, if we could do without philanthropy if we had social justice and everybody paid their fair share of taxes. And Pope Benedict points out that no matter how just a society is, you will still need love. And he says that, you know, charity can never be, or philanthropy can never be an answer to loneliness. You need something else. And so what I've tried to do in the book is to show ways in which these kind of qualities of empathy and human compassion and respect for the person you're giving to. So there's a mutual respect, as there was in the Middle Ages. I'm trying to find a secular way of injecting that into modern philanthropy.
Right. One thing that really struck me about modern philanthropy was the UK and the use of money over there. I think I saw figures of just over the last 10 years of money that was used. 4.7 billion was donated to education, half of which went to Oxford and Cambridge. The same people only gave 1 billion to the arts and only 222 million to the poor. So they're philanthropists, okay, but they seem to be investing in elitism, really.
Well, they're investing in the stuff that matters to them. I mean, most philanthropists give to things that, you know, even with a completely altruistic frame of mind, you know, your mum died of cancer, so you give to cancer research. You know, it's linked and it's personal. And these philanthropists who went to posh universities or top schools, or go into, you know, treated in top fee-paying hospitals, they tend to give their donations to the places that benefited them. So in the States, for instance, only a fifth of all the money that goes in philanthropy goes to the poor and disadvantaged. The rest of it goes to, you know, top universities, opera houses and so forth.
Right. That strikes me as not right. I imagine they would say that the money they're putting into Oxford and Cambridge is generating further income in those people who themselves will then be in a position to do good.
Well, yes, and one of the complicating things about the book, because it's easy to write a book that says all philanthropy is brilliant or all philanthropy is rubbish, and this book tries to kind of tread a tightrope, pointing out where it's good and where it's bad and how it can get better. But I mean, you know, if you look at the leading research on the vaccine for the coronavirus that's been developed in Oxford, Bill Gates is funding a lot of the money. He's putting up money to build factories to produce the vaccine even before it's approved, and he's committed to putting billions in to seven factories to produce seven vaccines. And if they turn out to be rubbish, you know, that's just money well spent in his view. If we get two good vaccines out of the seven, that's you know, that'll do. So even, you know, giving money to elite universities is not a kind of, you know, something that does no good for society. Okay. So it's a very complicated issue, and I try and explore these, you know, contradictions, and but also to celebrate the good things about philanthropy in the book.
Right. There was a phrase, I don't know if it was a review or from the book, that you're tracing the history of philanthropy from Greeks to geeks. Now, the geeks strikes me as very pertinent at the moment, because it seems that the internet age is just generating billions for a very small number of people, the people who owned Google and Apple and people like that. So would you worry about that? As you look at it, would you think that we're now increasingly in a situation where we're looking at certain individuals and how they use money? And, you know, would you have concerns around that?
Yes, a lot of the book deals with the question about accountability. Who are these philanthropists accountable to? And the book includes some suggestions of mechanisms which can make them more accountable. One of the downsides of the situation that you've just described is, I mean, it's parallel back at the turn of the last century with people like Andrew Carnegie, you know, the man who built 3,000 libraries all around the world, great philanthropist. But he made his money from ruthless exploitation of markets and cutting people's wages. So you've got that kind of, you know, giving one hand, taking away with the other, that kind of ambivalence. And you see in these rich people in Carnegie's day, and now you see this notion of, you know, I made all this money, so therefore I must be better than everybody else at deciding how to, you know, how to handle the money. So I'll decide how to spend it. And what I'm trying to do is inject, if you go back to the medieval times, even though it was pretty tough being a peasant in the feudal society, there was still some kind of acknowledgement in the theology of, and the social structure of the period that there was a two-way relationship. The rich had a duty to give to the poor, and the poor had a duty to pray for the rich. So there's a kind of element of, you know, mutual obligation, reciprocity, mutual respect, and that's gone in a lot of modern philanthropy. So I'm saying we need to find secular ways of talking about those things. And philanthropists need to listen more. They need to work with grassroots organizations and listen, you know, and take their advice. They need more of a sense of partnership than a kind of top-down business direction. So that's why the book is so has such a long range, because you have to go back to the Greeks and the Romans to understand these two traditions. You have to look at the way 1,000 years of Christian philanthropy worked during the Middle Ages and how it's changed in the modern era before you understand that a lot of what's wrong with modern philanthrocapitalism is traced back through that long journey.
Right. You said you wanted to look at the good and the bad and see how it could be better. As briefly as you can, how can it be better?
It can be better by philanthropists giving away a bit of power as well as giving away some pounds and punts. So they need to actually consult people on the ground who are the social problem, and not regard them as a problem, but regard them as part of the answer, part of the solution, and say, you know, will this work? Will that work? Bill Gates wasted $2 billion early in his career on an education project in America, which after a few years, he called all the educationists together in America and said, oh, I've decided this doesn't work. Well, you know, that's a failed experiment for a philanthropist, but for the kids involved, it's three lost years of education. Mm. So, you know, if he'd listened to the parents and the teachers and the local communities more, he might not have made that mistake. And to be fair to Bill Gates, his whole career over the past four decades has shown that he has learned, and he is, and Melinda Gates particularly is aware of the you know, this dimension to their giving, and they've improved no end in that time.
Great. Paul, a pleasure talking to you today. Thanks very much for joining us. The book is called Philanthropy, From Aristotle to Zuckerberg. Paul, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.